Welcome to the Word Theater Short Story Podcast, your weekly access to the best short stories read by great actors. My name is Cedaring Fox. I'm Word Theater's founder and artistic director. And together with Kirsty Peart, UK founder and creative partner, we have been producing live events featuring great actors and authors bringing short stories to life in Los Angeles, New York, and London for 20 years. Today, we'll be sharing a story by Irish author Kevin Barry that won the £30,000 Sunday Times EFG Short Story Prize. In The Guardian, Donal Ryan calls Kevin's story Beer Trip to Llandudno from Kevin's collection Dark Lies, The Island, a masterpiece of the short story form. Part of the magic of that story, and of all Barry's work, Donal writes, quote, is its dialogue, the earthy, pithy, perfectly authentic exchanges between his characters, unquote. When Donal asked Kevin about this, Kevin replied, if you feel like you're coming toward the final draft of a story, print it out and read it aloud, slowly, with red pen in hand. Your ear will catch all the evasions and the false notes in the story much quicker than your eye will catch them on the screen or page. Listen to what's not being said in the dialogue. Very often the story and the drama is to be found just underneath the surface of the talk. Well, you might have a clue about why we love to read short stories out loud at Word Theater, and this was a particularly fun performance, as Kevin's story was read by two great actors who have been friends since childhood, David Morrissey and Ian Hart. So now it's time to sit back, listen, and enjoy.
It was a pig of a day, as hot as we'd had, and we were down to our T-shirts taking off from Lime Street. This was a sight to behold. We were all of us biggish lads. It was Real Ale Club's July outing, a Saturday, and we'd had word of several good houses to be found in Llandudno. I was double jobbing for Ale Club that year. I was in charge of publications and outings both, which was controversial.
Rill! We'll pass Rill, won't we?
This was Mo.
We'd have come over to Rill as kids, you know, ferry and coach, and remember the roller coasters.
Never passed Prestatyn, me, said Tom Neresford. Tom N, so called, there were three Toms in Ale Club, rubbed his belly in a worried way. There was sympathy for that. We all knew stomach trouble for a bugger.
Down on its luck, would be my guess,
said Everett Bell.
All those old North Wales resorts have suffered dreadfully, haven't they? The whole mob has gone off to bloody Laos on packages in bloody Cambodia, bucket and spade.
Everett wasn't inclined to take the happy view of things. Billy Stroud, the ex-Marxist, had nothing to offer about Llandudno. Billy was involved with his timetables.
2 minutes and 50 seconds late, taking off,
he said, as the train skirted the Toxteth Estates.
This thing hits Llandudno for 1:55. I'm an exotic dancer.
Egbeth Station offered a clutch of young girls in their summer skimpies. Oiled flesh, unscarred tummies, and it wasn't yet noon. We groaned under our breaths. We'd taken on a crate of Marston Old Familiar for the journey, 3.9% to volume. Outside, the estuary skulked away in terrific heat, and Birkenhead shimmered across the water, which wasn't like Birkenhead. I opened my AA Illustrated Guide to Britain's Coast and read from the entry on Llandudno. A major resort of the North Wales coastline, it owes its well-planned streets and promenade to one Edward Mostyn, who, in the 19th century...
Victorian effort,
said John Moseley.
Thought as much.
If there was a dad figure among us, it was Big John, with his know-it-all interruptions. Who, in the 19th century, I repeated, laid out a new town on former marshland below...
They've built it on marshland, have they?
Said Everett Bell.
TB,
said Billy Stroud.
Marshy environment was considered healthful.
Well, says here there's water skiing available from Llandudno Jetty.
Oh, that'll be me,
said Mo, and we laughed. hot as pigs, but companionable, and the train was in Cheshire quick enough. We had dark feelings about Cheshire that summer. At the Northwest Beer Festival in the spring, the Cheshire crew had come over a shade cocky. Just because they were chocker with half-beam pubs in pretty villages, Warrington lads were fine. We could take the Salford lot even, but Cheshire boys were arrogant and we sniffed as we passed through their county.
A bloody suburb, essentially,
said Everett.
Cheshire's a regular fucking shithole,
said Mo. But we'd have to allow Delamere Forest is a nice walk, said Tom N. Eyebrows raised at this. Tom N, not being an obvious forest walker.
You're being lately, Tom, you know, nice walk.
Tom nodded, all sombre. Was out for a Christmas tree, actually. This brought gales of laughter. It is strange what comes over as hilarious when hangovers are general. We had the windows open to circulate what breeze there was. Billy Stroud had an earpiece in for the radio news. He winced.
They're saying it lit 36.5 Celsius.
We sighed. We sipped. We made Wales quick enough, and we raised our Marstons to it. Better this than to be stuck in a garden listening to a missus. We meet as much as 5 nights a week, more often 6. There are those who call us a bunch of sots, but we don't see ourselves like that. We see ourselves as hobbyists. The train pulled into Flint, and Tom N went onto the platform to fetch some beef and gravies from the pie-o-matic.
Just a thing,
said Billy Stroud, as we sweated over our dripping punnets.
Cold stuff causes the body too much work. I mean, you feel worse, but a nice hot pie goes down the treat.
Perverse, I know, but they're on the curries in Bombay, aren't they?
Everett said,
Mumbai.
The train scooted along the fried coast. We made solid headway into the Marstons. Mo was down a testicle since the spring. We'd called in at the Royal the night of the operation. We'd stopped at the Ship and Mitre on the way. They'd a handsome bitter from Clitheroe on guest tap. We needed the fortification. When real ale club boys parade down hospital wards, we tend to draw worried glances from the white coats. We are shaped like those chaps in the warning illustrations on cardiac charts. We gathered around Mo and breathed a nice fog of bitter over the lad, and we joshed him, but gently.
You sound a little high-pitched, Mo.
Well, the lad's going to need a working overtime.
Yeah, the disease bugger you want in a glass jar, Mo, one for the mantelpiece.
Love is a strong word. But we were family to Mo when we was up at the Royal having his bollock out. We passed Flint Castle and Everett piped up.
Richard II.
We raised eyebrows. We were no Philistines at Ale Club Merseyside Branch. Everett nodded, pleased.
This is where he was backed into a corner by Bolingbroke.
Boling who?
Bolingbroke the usurper. Old Dick surrendered for a finish at Flint Castle. Oh, that's how Shakespeare had it.
There's a contrary view, Ev.
Well, some say it was more likely Conway, but I'd be happy with the bard's read,
he said, narrowing his eyes, the matter closed.
We'll pass Conway in a bit, won't we?
I consulted my illustrated AA. Well, not, I said, but we may well catch a glimpse across the estuary from Llandudno Junction. There was a holiday air at the stations. Families piled on. The dads with papers, the mams with lotion, the kids with phones. The beer ran out at Abergele, and this was frowned upon. Poor planning. We were reduced to buying train beer, Worthington's. Sourly we sipped, and Everett came and had a go.
Maybe if one man wasn't in charge of outings and publications, we wouldn't be running dry halfway to Llandudno.
True, Everett, I said, calmly, though I could feel the colour rising in my cheeks. So if anyone cares to step up, I'll happily step aside from either or.
We need you on publications, kid,
said John Mosley.
I mean, you're the man with the computers.
Publications lately was indeed largely web-based. I maintained our site on a regular basis, posting beer-related news and links. I was also looking into online initiatives to attract the younger drinker. I'm happy on publications, John, I said. The debacle with the newsletter aside, newsletter had been a disaster. I accepted that. The report on the Macclesfield outing had been printed upside down. Off-colour remarks had been made about a landlady in Everton, which should never have got past the editor's eye, as the lady in question had very fine pumps. It hadn't been for want of editorial meetings. We'd had several, mostly down the grapes of wrath. So, how about outings, then? I said, as the train swept by Colwyn Bay. Huh? Where's our volunteer there? Who's for the step-up? Everett showed a palm to placate me.
There's nothing personal in this, lad.
No, I know that, Ev. Ale club outings were civilised events. They never got aggressive. Magdalen, yes, but never aggressive. Ross-on-Sea, the Penrith Sands. We knew Everett had been through a hard time. His old dad passed on and there'd been sticky business with the will. Ev would turn a mournful eye on us at the bar of the Lion in the snug of the ship and he'd say...
My brother got the house, my sister got the money, I got the manic depression.
Black as his mood could be, as sharp as his tongue, Everett was tender. Train came around Little Orme's Head and Billy Stroud went off on one about Ceausescu.
Now, the longer it recedes in the mind's eye, the more like Romania seems the critical moment.
Apropos of Bill?
Apropos my arse. As for Liverpool, myth was piled upon myth, wasn't it? I mean, he said the Labour sent out termination notices to council workers by taxi. It never bloody happened. It was an anti-red smear.
Thatcher's sick and old, Bill.
Said John Mosley.
Aye, and his spawn's all around us yet.
Said Billy, and he broke into a broad smile. His humours mysteriously righted. His fun returned. Looming then, the shadow of Great Orme's Head, and beneath it, a crescent swathe of bay, a beach, a prom, the terraces. Here lay Llandudno.
155... on the nose. So where's our exotic dancer, then?
Billy Stroud sadly raised his T-shirt above his man boobs. He put his hands above his head and gyrated slowly his vast belly and danced his way off the train. We lost weight in tears as we tumbled onto the platform. How much for a private session, miss? Called Tom N.
10 for 20 minutes. 5 and I'll stay the full half hour.
Said Billy. We walked out of Llandudno station and plumb into a headbutt of heat. Blood and tar, I cried. We'll be hitting the lagers.
Wash your mouth out with soap and water,
said John Mosley. Big John rubbed his hands together and led the way. Big John was first over the top. He reminded us there was business to hand.
We're going to need a decision, you know, about the national beer scoring system.
Here was a kerfuffle. The NBSS, by long tradition, ranked a beer from 0 to 5. 0 was take-backable, a crime against the name of ale. 1 was barely drinkable. 2, so-so. 3, an eyebrow raised in mild appreciation. A 4 was an ale on top form. A good beer in proud neck. A 5 was angel's tears. But a seasoned drinker would really dish out a 5. Would over the course of a lifetime's quaffing call no more than a handful of fives. Such was the MBSS as was. However, Real Ale Club Merseyside branch had for some time felt that the system lacked subtlety. And one famous night down Rigby's, we came up with our own system. We marked from 0 to 10. Finer gradations of purity were thus allowed for. The nuance of a beer were more properly considered. A certain hoppy tang, redolent of summer hedgerows, might elevate a brew from a 7 to an 8. A mellow back note, born of a good oak casking, might lift an ale again, and to the rare peaks of the 9s. Billy Stroud had argued for decimal breakdown, a 7.5 and an 8.5. Well, Billy would. But we had to draw the line somewhere. The national organisation responded badly. They sent stiff word down email, but we continued to forward our beer report with markings on a 0 to 10 scale. There was talk now of us losing the charter. These were heady days.
Stuff them is my view,
said Everett Bell.
But we'd lose a lot if we lost the charter. Think about the festival invoice. Think about the history of the branch.
Think about the bloody future, cried Tom N. We haven't come up with a new system to be awkward. We've done it for the ale drinkers. We've done it for the ale makers. I felt a lump in my throat, and I dare say I wasn't the only one.
Ours is a better system,
said Everett.
This much we know.
You're right,
said John Mosley. And this was the clincher. Big John's call.
I say we score 0-10.
Oh, well, you lot are in. That's good enough for me, I said. Six stout men linked arms on a hot land at no pavement. We rounded the turn onto the prom and our first port of call, the Heron Inn, which turned out to be an anticlimax. A nice house, lately refurbished, but mostly keg rubbish on taps. The Heron did, however, do a Phoenix tram driver on cask, 3.8%, and we sat with six of the same.
I've had better tram drivers.
Open Mo. I've had worse, countered Tom N.
She's got a nice delivery, but I'd worry about her legs,
said Billy Stroud shrewdly.
You wouldn't be having more than a couple,
said John Mosley. Not a skinful beer, I concurred. All eyes turned to Everett Bell. He held a hand aloft, wavered it.
A 5 would be generous. A 6, insane,
he said.
Give it a 5,
said Big John dismissively. I made the note. This was as smoothly as a beer was ever scored. There had been some world historical ructions in our day. There was a time Billy Stroud and Moe hadn't talked for a month over an 8 handed out to a Belhaven bombardier. Aylwards, we followed our noses. We walked by the throng of the beach. The shrieks of the sun-crazed kids made our stomachs loop. We made towards the Prom View Hotel. We'd had word of a new landlord there, an ale fancier. It was dogs dying in parked cars weather. The Prom's View ample lounge was a blessed reprieve. We had the place to ourselves, the rest of Llandudno apparently being content with summer, sea and life. John Mosley nodded towards a smashing row of hand pumps from the casks. Low whistles sounded. The landlord, hot-faced and jovial, came through from the hotel's reception. Another tactic, he said, would be to stay at home and have a nice sauna.
Same difference,
said John Mosley. Could be looking at a 37.2 now, said the landlord, taking a flop of sweat from his brow. Billy Stroud sensed a kindred spirit.
Gone up again, has he?
And up, said the landlord. My money's on a 38 before we're out.
Record won't go.
Nobody said record. We're not going to see a 38.5, that's for sure.
Brogdale in Kent, August the 10th, 2003.
2:05 p.m. I wasn't 5 miles distant that same day. Billy was beaten. Loading a van for a divorced sister. Ha ha, said the landlord, ramming home his advantage. Lugging sofas in the pigging heat and wardrobes. We bowed our heads to the man. Oh, what'll I fetch you, gents? A round of Cornish lightning was requested. You taking the sun?
Taking the ale.
After my own heart. Course round here, it's lagers they're after mostly. Bloody Welsh.
You can't beat sense into them,
said John Mosley. If I could, I would, said the landlord, and he danced. As a young featherweight might. He raised his clammy dukes, and then he skipped and turned. I'll pop along on my errands, boys. There are rows to hoe and socks for the wash. You go through pair after pair in this weather. And he pinched his nostrils closed. What a pong. Soon as you're ready for more, ring that bell and my good wife will oblige. So, adieu, adieu. And he skipped away. We raised our eyes. The shade of the lounge was pleasant. The Cornish lightning in decent nick. Call it 6, said Tom N. Nervelessly, we agreed. Talk was limited. We swallowed hungrily, quickly, and peered again towards the pumps.
The Lancaster bomber.
The Whistable mule.
How about that Mangan's organic?
I'd say a Lancaster all told.
Ring the bell, Everett.
And he did so. And a lively blonde, familiar with her 40s but nicely preserved, bounced through from reception. Our eyes went shyly down. She took a glass to shine as she waited for our call, the type of lass who needs her hands occupied.
Do for you, lads.
Irish. Her accent.
Round of Lancaster, wasn't it?
Said Everett. She squinted towards our table, counted the heads.
Times six.
Confirmed Everett. The landlady squinted harder. She dropped the glass. It smashed to pieces on the floor.
Maurice,
she said. It was Mo that froze. Stirred. Softened.
Barbara?
We watched as he rose and crossed to the bar. A man in a dream was Mo. We held our breaths as Mo and Barbara took each other's hands over the counter. They were wordless for some moments and then felt 10 pairs of eyes on them and they giggled. And Barbara set blushing to the Lancasters. She must have spilled half of it down the slops gully as she poured. I joined Everett to carry the ales to our table. Mo and Barbara went into a huddle down the far end of the counter. They were rapt. Real Ale Club would not have marked Mo as a romancer. The quiet ones you watch, said Tom N. Maurice?
Mo, with a piece,
whispered Everett Bell.
It could be that they're old family friends.
Tried innocent Billy.
Or relations.
Barbara was now slowly stroking Mo's wrist.
Four buggering fishwives I'm sat with,
said John Mosley.
What are we to make of these Lancasters?
We talked ale, but were distracted. Our glances cut down the length of the bar. Mo and Barbara talked lowly, quickly, excitedly down there. She was moved by Mo. We could see that, plain enough. Again and again she ran her fingers through her hair. Mo was gazing at her all dreamy, and suddenly he got a thumb hooked into the belt of his denims. Mr. Suave! He didn't so much as touch his ale. Next, of course, the jaunty landlord arrived back on the scene.
Oh, Alvy,
she cried.
You'll never guess.
Oh, said the landlord, all the jauntiness instantly gone from him.
This is Maurice.
Morris, you're joking. It was all polite handshakes then, and feigned interest in Mo on the landlord's part, and a wee fat hand he slipped around the small of his wife's back.
We'll be supping up,
said John Mosley sternly. Mo had a last whispered word with Barbara, but his smile was fixed now, and the landlord remained in close attendance. As we left, Mo looked back and raised his voice, a note too loud. Desperate he was.
Barbara!
We dragged him along. We'd had word of notable pork scratchings up at the Mangy Otter. Tell us, Maurice, said Tom N.
I'll leave him be,
said John Mosley.
It's an ex, that's all.
And Llandudno was infernal. Families raged in the heat. All of the kids wept. The otter was busiest when we sludged in. We settled on a round of St. Austell tributes from a meagre selection. Word had not been wrong on the quality of the scratchings. And the St. Austell turned out to be top form.
I'd be thinking in terms of a seven.
Or a shade past that.
It could be right on higher than seven,
said Billy Stroud.
Surely you're not calling that an eight.
Here we go, I said.
Now this is where your 7.5 would come in.
We've heard this song, Billy,
said John Mosley.
He may not be wrong, John,
said Everett.
Give him a 7.5 and he'll be wanting 6.3. 8.6 is to be no bloody end to it.
Tell you what, said Mo.
Oh, about I catch up with you all a bit later, you know. Where's next on the list?
We stirred at the carpet. It had diamonds on and crisps ground in it. Well, next up is the Crippled Ox on Burton Square, I read from a printout. Then it's the Hendersons on Old Parade.
Yeah, I see that one or the other.
He flew back the dregs of his St. Austell and was gone. We decided on another at the Otter. There was a Whitstable Silver Star, 6.2% to volume, a regular stinger to settle our nerves. What's the best you've ever had? Said Tom N. It's a conversation that comes up again and again, but it was a lifesaver just then. It took our minds off Mo.
Put a gun to my head. I don't think I could look past the draft bass I had with my dad, Peter Cavanas. 16 years of age, Friday tea time, first wage slip in my ass pocket.
Ah, but was it the beer or the occasion, John?
How can you separate the two?
And we all sighed.
For depth, legs, back note.
Said Everett Bell.
I do well to ever best the Swains anthem I downed on November Tuesday in Stockton-on-Tees in 1987. 4.2% of volume. I was still in haulage at the time. And I've had an anthem,
said Billy Stroud of this famously hard-to-find brew.
And I'd have to say, I found it an unexceptional ale.
Everett made a face. So, what's your all-time, Billy? The ex-Marxist knit his fingers atop the happy mound of his belly.
Ridiculous question. There's so much wonderful ale on this island. I mean, how is a sane man to separate a Pelham High Anglican from a Warburton's Saxon Fiend? You know, and we haven't even mentioned the great Belgian tradition. I mean, you devolve hardy dishwater, and then there's the Czechs, and then there's the Poles, the Germans. Gassy pop,
cried Big John. No fan of a German brew, of a German anything.
Nonsense! A Pauline of ice beer is a sensational sup in its day.
Where do you think Moe's headed? Said Tom N. Everett groaned.
He'll be away down the prom view, won't he, the big ape?
Moe, a lady killer, said Tom. There's one for breaking news.
No harm if it meant to. He smarted himself up a bit,
said John.
He has let himself go,
said Billy.
Since the testicle.
Hey, you plant spuds in those ears, I said. The Whitstables had us in fighting form. We were away up the Cripple Docks. We found there a miner's slattern on cask. TV news showed sardine beaches and motorway chaos. There was an internet machine on the wall, £1 for 10 minutes, and Billy Stroud went to consult the meteorological satellites. The slattern set me pensive. Strange, I thought, how I myself had wound up a real ale club stalwart. 1995, October. I found myself in motorway services outside Ormskirk having a screaming Barney with the then missus. We were moving back to her folks' place in Northern Ireland from dratted Leicester. We were heading for the ferry of Stranraer. At services, Mrs. told me I was an idle lard arse who'd made her life hell and she never wanted to see me again. We'd only stopped off to fill the tyres. She gets in, slams the door, puts her foot down. I'll give her 10 minutes, I thought. She'll calm down and turn back for me. 2 hours later, I'm sat in an empty Chinese in services, weeping and eating Szechuan beef. I call a taxi. Taxi comes. I says, where are we exactly? The bloke looks at me. He says, Ormskirk direction. I says, what's the nearest city of any size? Drop you in Liverpool for 20 quid, he says. He leaves me off downtown and I look for a pub. Spot, the Ship and Mitre, and in I go. I find a stunning row of pumps. I call a Beaver Mild out of Devon.
I wouldn't,
says a bloke with a beard down the bar. Oh?
Siam Martin's all familiar,
he says. But it turns out it's Billy Stroud. The same Billy turned from the internet machine at the Ox in Llandudno.
37.9. Bristol Airport, a shade after 3, flight delayed, tarmac melting.
Pig eat, said Tom N.
We won't suffer much longer, though. There's a change due. Might get a night's sleep,
said Everett. The hot nights were certainly a torment. Lying there with a sheet stuck to your belly, thoughts coming loose, beer fumes rising, a manky arse, the city beyond the flat throbbing with summer. Usually I'd get up and have a cup of tea, watch some telly, astrophysics on Beeb 2 at 4 in the morning, news from the galaxies, the light already in the eastern sky. I'd dial the number in Northern Ireland and then hang up before they could answer. Mo arrived into the Ox like the ghost of Banquo. There were terrible scratch marks down his left cheek.
A slap and they'll set you right, kid,
said John Mosley discreetly, and he manoeuvred his big bones barwards. Poor Mo was wordless as he stirred into the ale that was put before him. Billy Stroud sneaked a time-out signal to Big John.
Yeah, we nearly gave up, Henderson. Give it a miss.
Agreed, John.
As well as get back to known terrain,
said Everett. We climbed the hot streets towards the station. We stocked up on some Cumberland pedigrees, 3.4% to volume, always an easeful drop. The train was busy with day trippers heading back. We sipped quietly. Mo looked half dead as he slumped there, but now and then he'd come up for a mouthful of pedigree.
How's it tasting, kiddo?
Chanced Everett.
Like a 10.
And we all laughed. The flicker of his old humour reassured us. The sun descended on Colwyn Bay, and there was young life everywhere. I'd only spoken to her once since Ormskirk. We had details to finalise. She was happy to let it slip about her new bloke, some twat called Stan. He's emotionally spectacular, she said. Well, I'm sorry to hear it, love, given you've been through the ringer with me. I mean in a good way, she barked. I mean in a calm way. We had a bit of fun coming up the Dee Estuary with the Welsh place names. This was Tom.
Foy non grui.
That was Everett's approximation.
Finangrau,
said Billy Stroud, lilted it perfectly.
Simple. And this one coming up, Llanidmochnor.
Pedigree came down my nose. I laughed that hard.
Young girl, beautiful,
said Mo.
Turn round and she's 40, bloody three. Leave it out, Mo,
said Big John. But he could not.
She's come over early in 86 and she's living up the top of the central line, you know, Dayton Boyce. She's working in the pub there, live in. And she's ringing me from the phone box. In Galway, I'm in a phone box too. We have to arrange times, you know, 8 o'clock on Tuesday, 10 o'clock on Friday. It's a physical fucking pain. She's not in town anymore. I'll follow in the summer is the plan. And I get there, you know, Victoria Coach Station, 6 in the morning, 80 quid in my pocket. And she's waiting for me there. We have an absolute dream of a month. We're lying in the park. There's a song out and we make it our song, you know. Oh, to be in England in the summertime with my love close to the edge. That's a noise.
Shut up, Billy.
Of course, the next thing, well, the summer's over. No, I have to start with the BT up here and she's to follow on. You know, October is the plan. And we're ringing from phone boxes again, Tuesdays and Fridays. But the second Friday, the phone doesn't ring. Next time I see her, it's 40 bloody three.
Flynn Station we passed through, and then Connor Quay. Built up this, said Tom N. There's an Aldi, look. And that's a new school, isn't it?
Which means you want to be keeping a good 200 yards back.
We were horrified. Through a miscarriage of justice, plain as, Tom N. had earlier in the year been placed on a sex register. Oh, the world is mad! Tom N. is a placid, placid man. We were all six of us quiet as the grave on the evening train then. It grew and built. It was horrible. The silence. It was Everett, at last, that broke it. We were coming in for Helsby. Fair dues to Everett.
Not like you, John.
He said. Big John nodded.
Yeah, I don't know where I came from, Tom. Bloody stupid thing to say.
Tom N. raised a palm in peace, but there was no disguising the hurt that had gone in. I pulled away into myself. The turns the world takes. Tom dragged through the courts, Everett half mad, Mo all scratched up and one bald. Big John jobless for 18 months. Billy Stroud was content, I suppose, in Billy's own way. And there was me, shipwrecked in Liverpool. Funny for a while to see Penny Lane flagged up on the buses, but it wears off. And then it was before us in a haze. Terraced rows we passed out Speakway, with cookouts on the patios. Tiny pockets of glassy laughter we heard through the open windows of the carriage. Families and what have you. We had the black hole of the night before us. It wanted filling. My grimmest duty as publications officer was the obits page of the newsletter. Too many had passed at 44, 46. I'm off outings, I announced. And I'm off bloody publications as well.
You did volunteer on both counts,
reminded Big John. It would leave us in an unfortunate position, said Tom N.
For my money, it's been a very pleasant outing,
said Billy Stroud.
We've supped some quality ale,
concurred Big John. We've had some cracking weather, said Tom N.
Llandudno's quite nice, really,
said Mo. And around his scratch marks, an angry bruising had seeped. We all looked at him with tremendous fondness.
"'Tis nice,"
said Everett Bell.
"'If you don't run into a she-wolf. "'If you haven't done 10 rounds with every bloody scissor-hand,'
said John Mosley. We came along the shabby grandeurs of the city. The look on Mo's face then couldn't be read as anything but happiness.
"'Maurice is thinking of the rather interesting day he's had."
Mo shook his head.
"'Thinking of days I had years back.
"'It has this effect, Liverpool. "'You're not back in the place 5 minutes "'and you go sentimental as a famine ship. "'We piled off at Lime Street. "'There we go. 6 blokes in the evening sun. "'There's the Lion Tavern,' suggested Tom N. "'Well, there's always the Lion,' I agreed.
"'There's a couple of mangsails guesting at Bigby's,'
said Everett Bell.
Let's hope it's an improvement on the previous Manx effort,
said Billy Stroud.
There's the grapes,
tried Big John. There's always the grapes, I agreed. And Aylwards, we went about the familiar streets. The town was in carnival. Tropic of Lancashire in a July swelter. It would not last. There was rain due off the Irish Sea. And not for the first time.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Word Theatre Short Story Podcast, with David Morrissey and Ian Hart performing Kevin Barry's short story, Beer Trip to Clondudno. Kevin is the author of 3 collections of short stories and 3 novels, which we hope you will go and pick up at bookshop.org/shop/wordtheatre or ukbookshop.org/shop/wordtheatre/. This wonderful writer has won many awards in addition to the Sunday Times Award, including the 2013 International Dublin Literary Award, the 2015 Goldsmiths Prize, and he was nominated for the 2017 International Dublin Literary Award, the Rooney Prize for Irish Literature for his short story collection, There Are Little Kingdoms, and he was longlisted for the 2019 Booker Prize. Kevin Barry is also an editor of Winter Papers, an arts and culture annual. If you didn't know already, this year, 2023, marks the 20th anniversary of Word Theatre, and we have many in-person events scheduled, which patrons and enthusiasts can always access online from anywhere in the world, from the comfort of your homes. Please visit our website at wordtheatre.org to see how you can support this podcast by becoming a Word Theatre patron or enthusiast member. So this concludes the Word Theatre Short Story Podcast this week. Next week, we will have a performance by Alfred Molina of a brilliant Nick Hornby story. So tune in and be sure to tell all your friends. Special thanks to Jonathan Sachs for composing our theme music. And thanks to Los Angeles County of Arts and Culture for their continuing support of this podcast. Also, a big shout out to Jason Lee, our podcast editor. This is Cedaring Fox in Los Angeles. Until next week. Signing off.